am Linda Fischelberg for BizNews. Since 1993, Breadline Africa has been a key player in providing educational opportunities for children. The organization's approach involves converting shipping containers into functional educational spaces. A critical aspect of their work is addressing the safety hazards associated with pit latrines in rural schools. And we have Marion Wagner, the CEO of Breadline Africa, joining me in the BizNews studios to discuss this. I'm Marion. Welcome to BizNews.
Hi, good afternoon, Linda.
Well, I elaborated a bit on what you do, but can you expand on these activities of Breadline Africa?
Sure, Linda. The last 30 years, Breadline Africa has very much focused on improving educational outcomes for young children. And one of the key aspects that we found, particularly with preschools, was the lack of infrastructure. And by providing the infrastructure, we're often able to help preschools get registered and to provide a safer learning environment. And then we branched out into primary schools as well and provided libraries and feeding kitchens. And then last year, with the death of yet another child in a pit toilet, we then started looking at, you know, how can we tackle this and start replacing pit toilets in primary schools as well, since we're doing it at preschools. So yeah, it's become a quite a strong focus of ours in the last year, along with the infrastructure still at preschool level. We've now gone into primary schools and started replacing these unsafe toilets.
So for people who might not know what that is, you know, why are they a hazard?
A lot of the schools have been around for over 100 years, and the toilet solutions were really just large dugout holes, often 3 meters deep. And the seats or planks or anything they could find, cut out buckets, or maybe even sometimes there's nothing there, were just your planks of wood were placed on top of these open pits that the children would then use. And over a period of time, as you can imagine, they just start filling up with sludge and the smell is quite horrendous, and it becomes very unsafe. So young children particularly have to balance on two pieces of wood or balance on a rotting plank where there is sort of a cut-out toilet placed on it, has happened where the whole thing is given way and the child has fallen into this fecal matter, which acts like a clay. It pulls the child down, and then with a lack of oxygen in that chamber as well, it's a most horrendous, torturous way for any child to have to die. And quite a few children have fallen into pits. Many have died, many have been pulled out as well. And then on top of that, the structures that are surrounding these pit toilets, which sometimes look like bunkers or just very plain plastering with a tin roof, they have collapsed on the children as well. So there's an urgent need to address these pits, because not only is it the safety aspect of the child falling in, it's the fear element of that child having to use the toilet. These children are terrified. So the children then resort to open defecation instead of going into using the pits. And then on top of that, you've got snakes, flies, and everything else, and no hand washing facilities, because very often there's no water available. So these children have to come out of these environments. We saw one last week where the sewage was literally flowing out. So the children have to walk with their shoes and socks through the sewage, use the pit toilet, come out, and there's no hand washing either. So a lot of children miss school because of the hygiene factor, that the upset stomachs. Not only do they pass that on to each other, but to teachers and then to family members at home as well. And with a lot of the pit toilets that we're seeing, is there's also, because of the aging infrastructure, there's no doors, so there's no dignity. And then young girls, you know, when they've got their periods, tend to miss a week of school every single month. They don't come to school. So you have this, you know, called period poverty and high absenteeism, which obviously explains why, you know, up to 50% of children drop out of primary school, you know, when they don't matriculate. So yeah, it's a huge factor of dignity and safety, and really should be the right of every child to be able to use a toilet safely, even if it's not a flushing toilet. But the safety aspect and the hygiene and the dignity is so important.
So I've seen there was a tweet, that's what sort of prompted us to speak to you, that you raised 22 million rand to replace it. What kind of difference have you made with that?
So by the end of July, we'll have completed 24 schools. We set ourselves the target of 240 schools over 18 months. But that obviously, that requires quite a lot of fundraising. We're absolutely thrilled that we've raised over 20 million already. and had done 10% of the schools that we set out to. So of the 24 schools that we've done, we've provided in the region about 550 toilet facilities, a combination of low flush toilets, urinals, or dry toilets where there's absolutely no water supply at all. And that's to date, since last year, impacted over 11,000 children.
So is the availability of running water then a problem?
It is, particularly in the rural areas, a lot in the Eastern Cape. You'll find there's just no access. Even an hour from, you know, Durban International Airport, we find that they've maybe got a standpipe and there's a little bit of water coming out of the standpipe, but there's definitely no sewage system, no mainline sewage. We haven't come across any, even within an hour from big cities. And then, of course, the access to water in the Eastern Cape, particularly in the Highlands, there is absolutely no water. So if they're lucky, they'll get a water tanker that can go there and provide some drinking water for the children. But certainly that's not water that we could use to flush the toilet. So we have an option of having a dry toilet system and then a low flush system as well, which is connected then to a septic tank.
So you seem to be tipping away at this problem. How big is it? How much work is left?
It's a difficult one. When we started with the government addressing this at the same time, we believed that there was under 1,000 schools. But what we're seeing now, it's more like 3,500 schools. And they're predominantly in that area from Limpopo, Eastern Cape, KZN area. Those are the most challenging schools with aging infrastructure. There are schools that have absolutely no toilet facilities at all. But the ones that we focus on are the unsafe pits. So they may have ventilated, improved toilet systems that the government may have put in. Those are safe. They're not desirable, but they're safe. The ones we focus on are the ones where there's either no toilets or where there are unsafe pits. And then we make sure that before we go, those pits are completely closed up. So we've seen in the past where new toilets have been put in place, but the old pits were left open as a reserve or in order to throw rubbish into those pits. And that's the ones where some of the children have died. So we make sure that before we leave a site, if the pit is unsafe and no longer used, the pit is filled in, concrete slab is put on the top. So there's no way that a child could possibly fall in, and the old structures are knocked down and then the rubbish is removed. So they get the brand new toilet facilities without the danger of having the old ones left behind.
So what else do you do? Do you still have the schools in the containers?
We do have a lot of classrooms, and that's mainly the preschools where we place classrooms. And we use the converted insulated shipping containers and also prefabricated structures. So since COVID, shipping containers have become quite scarce and quite pricey. And that's where we've moved a lot to prefabricated. And actually, interesting enough, today we launched the first ever biomass preschool. So that was made completely out of recycled low carbon emission products. So that was the first of its kind. So we're always looking for innovative building materials with low footprint or recyclable material. So yes, we do the classrooms, the kitchens, the toilets, and libraries. That's the main area of focus. And it's really all about how to keep children in school, how to get children school ready to start off with, how to improve those educational outcomes once they're in school as well, and how to keep them safe.
And the money, where does that come from? Do you raise from corporates, from private individuals?
And from foundations as well. So we're very lucky to have a database of individual donors in South Africa, UK, Ireland, and Netherlands. And then in South Africa, we have received huge support from corporates through the CSI funding. And then also from some of the foundations, private foundations, as well as some of the larger foundations. And that's where, you know, individuals that have that same burning passion as us, someone like Mark Barnes, joined us as a partner last year as a voluntary sort of really fundraising partner. And through his connections, we've been very lucky to get a lot of the funding that we have.
Well, you come from the corporate world. What motivated you to switch to the nonprofit sector, which is a much harder environment?
It is, but it's so much more rewarding. You know, we see you when you come from corporate, obviously everything works differently and you have a lot of people. We're a very small team of people. We're only 17 people, but we work with fantastic partners and with suppliers. And I think one of the difference here is, like, you know, last week we were in KZN looking at a school that was in urgent need. And 2 days ago, we broke ground at that school. And in 2.5 weeks, that school will be completed. So it's a very quick turnaround. It's under 3 weeks to complete a school. And it's so tangible. You know, it's working with something that is so life changing and so meaningful. So not saying that corporate work isn't, but it's a lovely, you know, refreshing difference that it makes when you work in the nonprofit world, and just seeing the, you know, the life-changing impact on the young children is incredibly rewarding.
Well, what kind of expertise can someone like you bring from the corporate world to the nonprofit sector?
I think every nonprofit has to run as a business. So I think, you know, the business knowledge and applying business principles, making sure that you can try and cut out costs, streamlining operations, improving efficiency, all of those. I think, you know, good business principles and governance are incredibly important. And I think in the past, many nonprofits were started by people with passion and some funding. And that's been, you know, incredibly remarkable that they've done that. But I think having, you know, the corporate experience and looking at ways of how you can also scale up and get access to funding is definitely an advantage.
So what's next for Breadline Africa?
I think the area that we want to look at even further is looking at the whole menstrual health challenges and the sort of health aspects of the child. Because while we provide the infrastructure, working with partners, for example, they can do eye testing, because a child that can't read can't learn. We also have fantastic partners that do feeding, because again, a hungry child isn't going to learn. But the whole menstrual health area we are exploring, because of this period poverty, children don't have access to sanitary pads. We've now been talking more about the recyclable sanitary pads that we hand out. But then you also hear that there are children that actually don't even have underwear. So the recyclable sanitary pads is one thing. And now it's the underwear that you can now buy, the sanitary underwear that can be washed and reused. So that's an area that we'd like to look at further, to try and help young girls particularly get through schooling with their dignity intact and not miss school.
Marion Wagner from Breadline Africa, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you, Linda.